Hi everyone, this was a sick episode. I just talked with Alexis Sikorsky. He sold his company for plus $100 million and he has built it for around 17 years with plus 400 employees. It was just a sick session. We talked about personal things like how it affected him personally, laying off people during the financial crisis, for example, all sorts of other hiccups and issues they faced along the line, but also what he would do as an entrepreneur now if he were 20 years younger, and all sorts of things that he thinks entrepreneurs should focus on more, and other suggestions that would help you, your business, to grow. So really, I'm watching it again. I was part of it, and I still want to extract every nugget out of that session as much as possible. So I hope you like it. Please leave your feedback below, and yeah, enjoy the episode.
Wave Act, the web-free software company that understands what you want.
Hi Alexis, thanks for being here. You have exited one of your companies at a plus $100 million exit. So just starting out, like, how did such a huge exit actually affect your life? And, you know, just put us through that experience a little bit, if you would like to. And, you know, what was it from an emotional standpoint like? Like, when you're working towards that big goal, possibly for so many years, and then finally achieving it.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for having me. Of course, it changes your life. You have to realize that starting a company is a grind. Like in my case, it was the first exit that came in 2015, literally came after 15 years of grind, of bringing a company from literally two people in a basement after our day jobs to, 100 million plus exits. And we've been through so many pivots, so many mistakes, so many hard nights. We went through the global financial crisis of 2008. We started at the internet bubble in 2000. So it's been so much grind. We never had any financing. We all did that on our own money and our own time. And literally at some point in 2010, 2011, like, my house was mortgaged and we had everything in the company, me and my partner. And when you get finally, like, the exit is actually the first exit, which was smaller, obviously, but the first time when I sold 77% of my company, it's a process, right? It starts with a phone call. And the phone call doesn't make you feel good because you get many of these. And then it's a visit from the private equity people, and it's talks, it's negotiation, and then you get a letter of intent. And then you start to feel good. You're like, okay, so this thing is actually happening. But then you have 5 minutes to feel good. Then you have 6 weeks of due diligence where you really, really, really feel bad. Like, it's like, I mention it as 6 weeks of a rectal exam, right? So basically they go through everything, and then you feel super, super, super bad. Because till the letter of intent, they've been courting you. So they've been super nice. And then they're not courting you anymore. Now they want to look for a reason not to do the deal. Thank God I had like really good, really, really good private equity. And in the process, we became kind of friends. So the guy called me and said, listen, you're going to feel really bad for the next 6 weeks. Don't. He said, it's the process. Don't be scared. You're going to feel like you're treated like shit, but you're not actually. So that helped, but still you feel bad. And then you have the final negotiation, and then you have the sign-on meeting. And the sign-on meeting is long. It's a day because you have to go through all papers. So at the moment, it's a process. But there is one point in the process where the actual exchange of money happens. So when your lawyers get out of the room, go to the printer and print your bank statement, when you actually see the money in your account, that's for me was the moment. And it doesn't feel good only about the money. The money feels good, obviously, but it's like, it's a huge and tremendous feeling of achievement. Like, actually somebody wired money in your bank account to pay for what you've been building for the past 17 years in my case. So yeah, and then it does change your life a lot in a way that, okay, in my case, with that amount, I knew that my kids would always have a roof on their head and their school will be paid or so. That's obviously part of the thing, but it also changed your life a lot professionally because, like, up to that point, and that's something we might talk about later, it's a very important key point because up until then, you never had a boss. You never had, like, anybody giving you orders or even, like, telling you what to do. And suddenly, like, and in my case, it was the first time of my life, I actually working for somebody. So it does change a lot.
And the major thing that I'm just wondering is, because a lot of people that had a huge exit, or a lot of people that say, if they don't already have the next thing they're working on, they're falling, they, you know, have to deal with, let's say, mental issues because there's suddenly a hole in the life or something like that. Was that the case for you, or have you, you know, how was it?
Yeah. Not at all, but literally not at all. First of all, it's a progressive thing, right? Like, it's in my case, at least, there are some cases where you get the check and you leave. It's rarely the case, especially not in private equity. And in my particular flavor of private equity, which is an MBO, you stay on board. Like, obviously, you stay on board. And so, yeah, for 2 years, I was still the CEO. And then we hired a company that was way bigger than we were. Like, in 2017, I think, we company was probably doing 20 million, a little less than 20 million revenue, and we bought a company who was doing north of 25 million. So it was a big M&A. So that took me a lot of time, and I was in charge of that. And after that, I realized that the CEO of this company was much better than I was. Like, the guy had major experience in international company, bigger, larger group. And I went to see the PE guys and say, listen, he should be the CEO. Like, we hired him to be head of sales, but he was definitely CEO material. So then I stepped down, the CEO became chairman. So for a year, I literally, well, best year of my life, I was paid to do nothing, literally. So, like, you basically full salary and do one meeting per month. And after that, I sold the rest of my shares, and I just wanted to move on with my life. And no, I never had the feeling like, oh, what am I going to do? You have a little bit of feeling like, you used to be somebody important. Everybody would call you, and suddenly nobody's calling you anymore. So there is a bit of that, but no, I can say I had mental health issues. And when I was ready to go back to doing something, I started my advisory business. So no, I never had that.
Okay, awesome, super exciting. And how did it all start? Right, you said you have started that company with your partner around the 2000s. What was the main trigger for you to go that step?
So the year is 1999. I was the owner of CEO of a computer training company. No, apologize, fuck that. I was an employee of this company yet. I hadn't bought it back yet. So I was an employee of this company, and I remember 99, right? It's the beginning of internet becoming a serious thing. Before that, it was just presentation website, and we had really good guys, and I thought, like, we should start building internet application, not more internet website. So we're talking at the beginning of e-commerce, and like we were working with British and American Tobacco on data and stuff like that. And so we started this company with a friend of mine who was finishing his PhD of theoretical physics. So we were doing that. He was doing his PhD during the day. I was running I was teaching during the day, and the evening we started doing that. So it really started more like a friendly adventure, and we were working every night. So we put the kids to bed and working from like 8 p.m. to 2 a.m., and we did that for like a year. and starting to build momentum.
So you already had kids at that time?
Yeah, I had two kids, but they were babies at the time.
That sounds rough.
Well,
for you, I mean.
I'm going to tell you a story. As when you're an entrepreneur, you'll at the end, we had like 450 employees. So you have tons of people who come and say, hey, can you see my son? Like, he wants to be an entrepreneur. Can you tell him what it is to be an entrepreneur and stuff like that? So you constantly have kids in their early 20s or even teenagers who come and ask you. And I always have this exercise that I do. I always have a copy of Fortune 500. So I get the kid in my office. I give him the Fortune 500 magazine and say, you're going to do something for me. You're going to come back in a week. And in a week, you're going to look at all the owners, founders, CEO of this Fortune 500 company. And you're going to tell me what they have in common. Have fun. It's a very, very difficult exercise because they come from all backgrounds, culturally, geographically, in terms of studies. You have people who are already rich. You have people who come from not. And usually they come back and say, I have no idea. So I can tell you what they have in common. And they all have one thing in common. They work for 16 hours per day. It's like you don't get into that job if you're not ready to work hard. At the end, yes, you have times that you don't have to work that hard because you have a good team in place. But like even at that point, look at the CEOs and like you work hard. That's the thing. So yeah, I was in my early 30s. I was working two jobs and I was raising a family. And yeah, it was hard work, no question.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, of course, nothing that's worthwhile comes easy.
Yeah.
But that's always the thing. And when you, 450 people in a company, that's a lot. Like, had you, I'm pretty sure you had them, like, what were some of those key moments where you questioned everything, where you said, I'm not sure if I want to continue this?
All the time.
All the time.
Literally all the time, at least for the first 10 years. There are particular moments that I'll remember for my whole life and that are like literally moments. 2009, sorry. So our company at the time is a banking software company. So 100 of our clients are banks, 100% of our clients, sorry. And all private banks, Swiss and international. Company at that point is probably doing, 10, 12 million revenues. At that point, they have probably 50, 60 people in the company, give or take. And then 2008, global financial crisis. So my clients called me and say, oh, by the way, we're not going to buy anything from you. So the revenue basically goes to zero. Not to zero because we had maintenance, but
sure.
We lost 60% of the revenue, give or take, like suddenly. And then you have to fire people. Two rounds. First round of 18. Swiss law demand that you have to tell if you fire more than 10 people on the same day, you have to give 3 weeks advance notice. So you send an email and that say, within 3 weeks, we're going to fire more than 10 people in this company. So you imagine like the feeling and the thing in the company. And this particular day, we actually call 18 people in the boardroom and hand them a paper and said, you're fired. So I actually hired a guy whose specialty is to help people find a new job. So so we gave them all, like, I think 2-3 months salary plus that, but still, like, you see these people in their eyes and shake their hands. And that's by far is the worst moments of my life. And the first time was actually okay because, you know, in a company, you have people that are like, should I really keep them? So the first round was mainly people like that. Second round, I had to fire good people. and really, really good people. And all these people were my friends. They were not just employees. So yeah, these are moments like when you really want to, actually you want to crawl somewhere in a fetal position and die. That's how you feel. But then you have tons of moments. Every time you lose a client, every time you go to a RFP, it doesn't work. And every time your competitor come with something half decent, you think like, oh, like, am I really doing that right? Like, and you pivot. Like, you have to pivot all the time. So every pivot is doubt. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I can imagine that's definitely a rough spot to be. But it's part of the journey, right?
It's the tough part of the journey. Like, to that day, and it's probably one of the reasons I'm not starting something big again, is like every time I had to fire people, I literally don't sleep 3 days before and 3 days after. It's really, it's a bad feeling. It's really the worst feeling.
Especially if they're good people, right? Because they didn't,
Yes, but in a way, even if they are not good people, that's your problem. It's not theirs, right? You hired them. You made the mistake. So, yeah, it's easier. Like, I usually never had to deal with people who are like bad human beings because hopefully I would notice that. So I didn't have to fire lazy people or people who didn't want to work. It's rare. I very rarely fire people. I always try to like find them a new job or something like that in the company, but it still happens. And yeah, that's the really, really hard part. And you have like the moment is like, how am I going to pay the salary at the end of the month? Like, you have these moments very often.
Absolutely. So looking back at all these things, of course, from the money perspective, it's definitely, I think it was worth it, right? Please correct me if not. But from what would you say, what did it do to your, that sounds a little bit mindful now, but what did it do to your, to you as a person? How did it change you?
What did it do to my soul? That's what you're asking, actually.
Yeah, like you are really empathetic. I hear all these, I feel that positive swings. But, you know, especially when you're kind of a good person or trying to be, it really hurts, right? When you still have to do these things.
I don't know if you ever met people in your life, who are good at one thing. I don't know if you ever met like a professional pianist or a professional musician or an athlete. It's like they all come with this sense of there was no other path for me. And that's how I view that. I'm an entrepreneur. There's literally nothing else I can do. And I did a little brain exercise after I left the company, after I had my 2-3 years of retirement. I said, okay, should I go get a job? And then I said, okay, so what job should I get? And I'm literally good at nothing. Like, I'll never get any kind of C-suite job because I'm definitely not good enough to be a CFO, even less a CTO. A CEO, it was the worst job in the world. So I had no choice. That's what I am. I'm an entrepreneur. I started my first company when I was 15. Not the most successful company, but the first company when I was 15, like exporting, importing stuff, because I already knew that that's me. I create. And that's, by the way, one of the things I talk to people about is know who you are. Like, are you a leader? Are you a manager? Do you have a vision? Like, know who you are. It's the most important thing. If you are a manager, if you're really good at managing people and projects, and that's great, but that won't make you an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs are not managers. They're leaders. They need managers. I wish I knew how many managers I needed at the time. I would have avoided tons of mistakes. But yeah, it's hard. But honestly, it brings so much more joy than pain. So we were focusing on the painful stuff, but I'm 53 years old, and not one day in my life I went to work bored. How many people in life can say that? So I'm fantastically lucky. Like, I don't make it sound like I'm whining. It's like not once have I been bored going to the office.
That's awesome. If, you know, I'm just wondering, like, if it wouldn't have been that company, would you have seen a different opportunity at that time? And what do you think about it now? Because usually you have a couple of other things in your mind, and then you settle down for one thing. Was just...
Yeah, I had 20 ideas. I have one regret in my life. I don't have many because, like, ideas are worth nothing. Like, everybody had ideas. But I had one idea, and that was earlier than that. It was probably, like, 87, 88. Start the dot-com thing. And I say, ooh, I should sit in front of my computer and buy tons of dot-com domain names. And for instance, my name is Sikorsky. I say, oh, I have to not forget to do Sikorsky.com. And obviously, as I'm a major procrastinator, I didn't do any of the, I'd be a billionaire now. I would probably own, like, I don't know, Sunny.com. And like, already Sikorsky.com, I would have sold to the helicopter company. So that was an idea I had, I didn't do. I had tons of ideas that I never did. I also have tons of ideas I did. So that's my first successful company. It's not my first attempt to a company. So that's one advice I give to people. Try and fail. Like, it's okay. It's harder in Switzerland and France than it is in the Anglo-Saxon world, because failure is a bit like frowned upon, but it's a mistake. Like, the only way to be sure to not fail is to not try, right? So, like, yeah, I had a few ideas, and like I had that was not a failure. That was I needed to leave the country a little bit fast. But I had a internet provider and internet cafe in Senegal before I started New Access, and that was actually a huge success. But it didn't end up so well. We get a little bit of a disagreement with the local authorities. But
okay,
yeah.
gotcha. Intermission. If I could ask you for one single favor, it would be that you hit subscribe onto this channel, because it helps our channel more than you can imagine. And, you know, the bigger the channel gets, the bigger the guests get. So thank you very much for watching, and let's continue with the episode.
Gotcha.
Yeah, interesting. So aside from that, let's put that a little bit into more structure. You have tons of things that you probably could tell entrepreneurs, but usually there is always this, you know, there's certain advice that only works for entrepreneurs at a certain scale, but doesn't work for beginner entrepreneurs, for example. So what would you say to some entrepreneur or founder just starting out, for example, like, let's say below 200,000K annual revenue, or 1 million or something like that?
Grind. So I have a few advice for this period. First of all, save every penny you can. That's my first mistake. That's the biggest mistake I made. Like, oh, this month I have a good month. Let's hire one more guy, even if I don't really need him, right? I actually, it's the only time I use a biblical reference. At the beginning of the Bible, there is the story of Pharaoh's, and Pharaoh's dreams of 7 fat cows being eaten by 7 skinny cows. You know that story, right? And that's a remember that bad years will follow good years. So at the beginning, by the way, that's an advice that's worked from the one guy in his garage to Amazon and Apple. Have a war chest as much as you can. Always, always know that there will be bad times. There will be mistakes. So at that period, like the pre-1 million revenue, the pre-profit, first is grind and save every penny. Second piece of advice is, do not rush into financing. So I get I have a bit of a contrarian opinion on that. I'm aware. I get 50 phone calls per week of entrepreneurs saying, oh, okay, so now my company is at that point, I'm making 100,000 of revenues, I want to raise a seed. Why? So, well, because I'm going to grow faster. No, you're not going to grow faster. You're going to spend 6 months trying to raise 200,000 that you're not going to get. And if you do get them, you'll have to give away 30% of your company for money you don't need. So do not try to go for financing only and really only when you need it, which very often is never. Like, lots of successful companies don't need Series F financing. They're like, just get your ass off your chair and go work, go get clients. So that's my second piece of advice. Do not go for financing before you actually really need it. And sometimes never go for financing. Third piece of advice would be, know who you are, know where you want to be. There's two types of businesses, right? You have your lifestyle business. And I'd say it's a good like 50, 70, 80% of the businesses that start. They make $1 million revenue per year. They make $250,000 of profit. And plus you add 100,000 of the owners and his family having their cars, their vacation on the company. And that's a lifestyle business. And it's very, very valuable. And I'm not dismissing it. It's just not what I do. But it's really like, know who you are, because it's a completely different strategy. Like, when you get to $1 million, usually most of the company I take on board are $1 million revenue more. I don't really specialize in startups. I'm not really good at that. I have a few, but mainly I work with people who are over $1 million revenue. And now it's the time that you really need to know. It's totally different strategy. You want to grow a lifestyle business that's going to pay you $500,000 per year. You're going to live comfortably to the rest of your life and maybe leave it to your children. That's one strategy. And do you want to go to $100 million plus exit? That's a completely different strategy. So that would be my first advice. Around this moment, know who you are. Are you a leader? Are you a manager? Do you want $100 million exit, or do you want a lifestyle business? So that's around the time when you need to make this decision. And after that, in the million plus and let's say 5 million plus revenue company, well, even earlier than that, actually, one of the moment you decided you want a growth business, then you have to think M&A. Like, all my clients ask them, I want you to think M&A every day. Every day you go out, you say, what can I buy? Because external growth is so much easier and faster than internal growth. So think M&A. Don't be scared of private equity. Never be scared of private equity. That's another piece of advice for a little bit later. But get yourself ready. Do your own due diligence on yourself all the time. Get ready. And when you get to the moment you're ready to talk, there's an advice I use that I like this sentence is, never, ever lie about the past. Like, even one penny you don't like, because they will find it. But nobody is asking you to be realistic about the future. Dream big. Dream big and tell them you're dreaming big. Because they will know. They will know if you believe what you're saying. Does that sum it up?
That's interesting. And I think, especially the last part, dreaming big, right? That totally maps that funding path, right, or acquisition path. Because usually, as you said, know who you are. If you want just a lifestyle business, your goal is likely not to scale it up to whatever. And people always do business with people they like and trust.
Yeah.
So if you lie about something, it's difficult.
I'm going to tell you at that point, you decide if you like it or not. I'm going to tell you the story of my exit. How did it happen? Because it plays into the dream big, right? So I get the phone call in 2015. At that point, we are 7 years past the global finance crisis, and we are recovering. We're still recovering. So the company at that time is basically back to the revenue it was doing in 2008. So basically, it was 7 years for nothing. I would optimistically say the company was break even. That would that takes some creative accounting to, it was roughly around break even, let's say. And I get a phone call from a private equity. Like I get a phone call from a private equity every week. And this one, for some reason, the guys were French, so we are culturally close. They started the private equity after they sold their software business, so they knew what we were doing. So I said, okay, come. And they came from Paris, come sit with me, spend a day with us. And my initial meeting was very, very, very clear. I said, guys, I'm sorry, I think I wasted your time. The company is not for sale because now the value of the company is zero. It's still losing a bit of money. It's going to be break-even by the end of the year. It's already break-even on a month-to-month basis, but we were in June, so it said the end of the year is going to be break-even, but the year-to-date is not break-even yet, so it's not a good time for me to sell the company. They said, okay, I understand. That's totally valid. Let's keep talking just for the fun. We took our plane. Let's keep talking. Guys were smart. So we go into numbers, and I said, okay, at the end of the day, I say, okay, guys, you know what? I like you. Why don't you come back in 2 years when my company is profitable, and then we're going to discuss. And they say, no, we're not going to do that, actually. We're going to do something a little bit different. You're going to go home, and we're going to come back in a week. And within a week, you're going to do a business plan. You're going to do a 2 years business plan. I don't want a 10-year business plan. I want you. You just told me you're going to be profitable in 2 years. Do a 2 years business plan, and that's what we're going to buy. Said, okay. Took my brother. We went. We did a business plan, which was very optimistic. Like, we were doing break-even, and we put $2.5 million of profit within 2 years. Like, very optimistic. They came back in a week, look at my business plan, say, okay, I'm going to buy the $2.5 million EBITDA that you promised in 2 years, and I'm going to pay you 85% cash and 15% earnout. And like, I look at my brother and I said, these guys are high. They are crazy. And obviously we signed. 2 years later, not only we did our crazy business plan, but we doubled it. And that's the key with private equity. And that's why I say, don't be scared, because these guys know something you don't know. They know you're being a dreamer. They know you're being optimistic. They're not idiots. They know exactly what you have done. But what they know that you don't is they know the value they bring. You don't know that. So it's not in your business plan. It's not in your business plan that these guys have run 20 companies like yours. So they know exactly how to optimize. They have a big network of people to sell to. They have good people all around. So they bring so much value. That's why you dream big when you talk to private equity, because they know something you don't. It's their own value in a deal.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that absolutely makes sense, right? Because always when you hear founders on one hand raising money, but also private equity or just VCs, it's always about the value exchange, right? And basically just the growth that they can contribute to your company as well. Because that's, you know, when you're working in your company, you're becoming blind to certain things.
You're 100% blind, and more than that, it's you are lonely. You are lonely. That's something people have to be aware. It's a lonely job to be founder and CEO. You have no board. I mean, you can do a fake board, but at the end of the day, if you own the company, the people in your board, they have no power. So you're not accountable to anybody. All your decision, like you take on a daily basis alone decision that impacts the life of hundreds of people, because it impacts the life of all your employees, all your clients, many, many employees. Clients are not that important, but it impacts the life of your employees, and you're alone, and suddenly you're not alone anymore. Like, and by the way, that's how private equity make their money, right? Because they're all competing for the same company. So the one that are successful are the one who can buy cheap their own knowledge and their own value. So yeah, no, absolutely. You're blind and you're alone. And also in my case, but it's a case of most founder, right? You start a company, you start it small and you grow it big. So basically every day it's a prototype for you. like every day you run the biggest company you ever run in your life. So like, yeah, you really need the help.
Absolutely.
On April 16th, I'm releasing my book. It's called Cashing Out. It tells my story as from the start of the company to the 100 million plus exit. And it develops a methodology and tells you how you can go from your startup or 1 million company to 100 million exit.
Going back, you said you don't want to build a big company now again because you went all through that hassle and, you know, you look, sounds like you want to focus on life quality now. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But if you would start such a business again, do you have some industries or things, ideas, services that you are willing to share that you find interesting enough to evaluate them if there's a market or, you know?
Yeah, there's several things actually. Providing you don't need outside money, I love dying markets. Nobody is interested in SaaS software anymore. Nobody is interested in that. Everybody wants AI, med tech, deep tech, whatever. So everything, you have tons of companies in the old sector that are producing tons of value that with a little push, a little help can bring 20 years of value and that nobody is interested in because it's not the buzz, right? Like, I don't know, like I'm talking to a company that's absolutely fantastic, by the way. Their job is to bring bespoke old banking software in the cloud. That's absolutely brilliant. But you have so much in the old stuff that nobody wants. Like I was talking to ad companies who write contents for hospitality. They're dead because AI will do that in 3 years. But they have 3 good years. Like lots of stuff like temporary business. That's like where the AI is not yet and stuff like that. So that's on the ideas I have. And there is another idea I have, and I would definitely have done it if I was 15 years older. There's two stuff I would have done if I was 20 years older. One is, I don't know if you're any familiarity with the banking universe. It's extremely annoying. But the Americans are putting a huge amount of pressure on all the banks in the world to basically get rid of the American clients. It works. Like, for instance, Switzerland, there is almost no more American client in Swiss private bank, which is okay for uber wealthy people. But you have tons of expats and like called mass affluent people with decent amount who are really have trouble banking everywhere in the world because they have an American passport. And I would start a bank targeting only American clients. It would be fully US compliant and all the stuff that the banks don't want to do because they're terrified. So that was one idea. If I was 20 years younger. The other idea is somebody at some point need to write a proper back office system for banks because all banks in the world are running off on systems that are 25, 30 years old. It's ridiculous. It makes no sense. It's like everybody was still driving a Ford T or something like that. It makes no sense. So that's two things I would do. And then if I had tons of cash and the universe that fascinates me, it's med tech. It's CRISPR, it's gene editing. That's like, if I was smarter, younger, and richer, I would be in that in that area, but I'm none of these things. So.
Well, awesome, exciting. Thanks for sharing these, Alexis. I really appreciate it. Are there maybe, as a last question, except you want to share more things, three key takeaways you want people to remember from this session?
Know who you are. Number one, know who you are, know where you go. know where you're going, sorry, doesn't mean that you have a 10-year plan. I don't believe in 10-year plan. I don't believe a plan over 2 years has any value, but know the ultimate goal. Do you want to get rich? Do you want to have a lifestyle business? Do you want to be famous? Do you want to do good? Do you want to do social? But know what's your motivator. Know who you are. That's my first takeaway. My second takeaway, and I know it sounds contradictory, but it's not. Do not fall in love with your plan. Pivot, pivot, pivot. Like, you're going to pivot all the time. So know where you're going. Do not fall in love with the plan. And the third one is get help. It's a lonely business. Get help. Find people who are good where you're not. Find people who have been where you're going. There's tons of us. Like, even if you don't want to pay an advisor or you cannot afford an advisor, find a free one. Like, there's tons of us. We're all around. We're in LinkedIn. I never, ever say no to somebody who send me a message and say, hey, what do you think about that? Like, we do that. There's a reason we're still out there. It's, we love helping young entrepreneurs. Like, get help.
Okay, interesting. And sorry, I know I said last question, but you just brought up something really interesting. You said pivot a lot. And there's this fine nuance, right, between shiny object syndrome, like jumping onto new things all the time, and pivoting. Like, how do you differentiate between those two? How do you make sure it's just not the new thing, but the other thing would have worked too if you put enough effort in it? Like, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. That's what's called experience, right? Like, and again, talk to people. You know something that's very interesting? You know people you can talk to, you never talk to? Talk to your clients. They know. Like, ask them. People never ask. So 2006, I was selling for 3 years now my electronic document management system, and I was getting bored. Honestly, like, there was nothing to build in this product. It's a pure commodity. It's hard to sell, but when it's sold, it stays forever because nobody wants to change that. It was not super exciting. So I sat 10 of my clients, not the biggest one, but the one I had the best relationship with. I say, guys, what do you need? Well, what can I build that you would actually buy? And I was expecting 10 different ideas, and they all told me the same thing. It was the time where compliance became big in the bank. And they say, well, we have a big pain. Is like, every time we need to do any kind of compliance in our clients, we need to go to 7 different systems and talk to 7 different people. Can we have, please, a product when we have a 360-degree view on our clients? Say, okay, we'll do that. And, you know, your clients know. So people don't buy your stuff, ask them why. Why aren't you buying that? Like, I have a friend who, fantastic entrepreneur, his name is Daniel Priestley. And he does something, he's the king of the wait list. So every time he wants to put a new idea out there, he said, we are coming out with that soon. Will you be interested? Please join the wait list. And you ask like 5 questions. That's it. He knows if nobody joined the wait list, it was a bad idea. If 500 people joined the wait list, it's a good idea. It cost him 2 hours. You know what I mean? Like, ask people, no. Like, ask your clients. Oh, I'm pissed at you. Yeah, okay, let's sit. And why? What should we be doing differently? What do you need? Why aren't you buying? I have 6 products. You bought 4. Why aren't you buying the other 2? Or you already have it from a competitor? Why? Why are you switching? Like, talk to people. They know.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Alexis. Can't tell you how much I learned myself.
Thank you. That's nice to hear.
And yeah. Thank you for your time, and I hope the audience, I'm pretty sure the audience liked it as well. So please leave your feedback below, and I hope you liked the episode. Ernesto and I did for sure. So if you have any feedback for us, please leave it below. And if I could ask you for one single favor, please hit subscribe on this video. It really helps our channel grow. So thank you very much for watching, and don't forget to check out Alexis' new book.
Wave Act, the web-free software company that understands what you want.